I get some great, knowledgeable guests. Professor William Jacobson is the star over at legalinsurrection.com. I've been at that blog, reading that blog for years. He's also a professor at Cornell. Is that right?
That's correct.
And I wanted to ask you, you have actually a post right now that I recommend everyone go to at legalinsurrection.com about whether or not the president of the United States should, in fact, do what he announced he's going to do, which is sit down and let Bob Mueller grill him.
That's right. My answer is very short and to the point. No, there is no way. If I am Donald Trump's lawyer, I let him do this, because you got to understand, Mueller has already gone through dozens and dozens of witnesses. There is no information that Robert Mueller and his team need from Donald Trump. If they have a case, they have one. If they don't have a case, they don't. The only reason to put Trump in a witness chair, whether it's under oath or not, is to get him to make mistakes. And if there's anybody who is likely to make mistakes, it's someone with the personality of Donald Trump, somebody who's a salesman, somebody who thinks he can convince people of things, somebody who shoots from the hip, somebody who is given to bombast. All of those characteristics of his served him very well in the campaign. There could be a disaster with professionals like Mueller's team. And I always, you know, joke, and I've written about it, that the team Mueller has put together has almost as many attorneys as the entire U.S. Attorney's Office for the state of Rhode Island, which is my home state. So he has put together, I think it's 16 or 17 or 18 lawyers, all of whom have backgrounds in one thing, convicting people, and including convicting people on perjury, obstruction of justice. And remember, it doesn't really matter whether the interview is under oath or not. It's certainly higher level if it's under oath. But if you lie to the federal investigators, you can go to jail. Just ask Martha Stewart. Just ask Scooter Libby. Right. You don't have to be convicted of perjury. Just ask the guy Papadopoulos or whatever his name was who lied to investigators. I don't know if it was under oath or not. I don't think it was, because didn't plead to perjury. And so there's many things that can go wrong. If they are asking Donald Trump questions, they are only asking him questions they already know the answer to. And they're asking him those questions not because they want information that he uniquely in the world has. They're asking them to catch him in mistakes, which can then be used against him, so-called process crimes.
Okay, well, first of all, Professor, I just have to say, the idea that Donald Trump, of all people, might say something impolitic or embellish or talk too long, that's so not like him. I'm really taken aback by that criticism. The second thing is, though, is could you have a prep series of answers? If assuming for a second that we're not talking about Donald Trump, you could have a prep series of answers kind of along the lines of the Bill Clinton, you know, it depends on what blank is, where Trump has a crafted, you know, answer or two, and he just sticks to those answers or two. Then afterwards, you can say, hey, look, I got asked questions, I gave answers, moving on.
I don't think that would work. If you want that, I mean, remember, Clinton, I believe, was forced into that deposition.
Exactly.
And if Robert Mueller can get a court order and an appeals court to affirm it and the Supreme Court to affirm it, and someday Donald Trump, under force of law, has to show up and give testimony, well, then that's what he has to do. But you don't do that voluntarily in this situation. And remember, they can do this another way. Mueller can pose written questions to Trump, which can be carefully crafted and can be very meticulously gone over. And so if Robert Mueller is actually looking for information,
right,
he can get it other ways. But to put Trump at a table with Mueller and Weissman and all the other crew they have there, who's have histories of convicting people and having those convictions overturned for prosecutorial misconduct, okay, that is not something that Trump should be volunteering to do. And whatever people want to say about, oh, well, he didn't sit down, et cetera, that pales in comparison to the legal jeopardy
sure.
he is putting himself in if he misremembers something.
Sure. And I also don't understand if he's given written questions and he gives written answers and he says, hey, these are my answers, then he's answered the questions. There's nothing, you know, this isn't a TV show. This isn't, you're looking for the Perry Mason moment. If there really is something Bob Mueller doesn't know and he needs to know, he can write it down and President Trump and his lawyers can write an answer back and that'll be that. I want to ask about the broader issue, though. I'm always uncomfortable when a chief executive is, questioned in the process, because I don't want to weaken the power of the presidency for a future president. Just like I'm always annoyed when Congress hands over power to the chief executive because they go for 4 years without passing a budget, like Harry Reid did. What are the constitutional implications of this, or are there none?
Well, traditionally, the view is that, for example, that a president cannot be indicted while in office. There are some scholars who dispute that, but that's, I think, the prevailing view. And it's for the very reason, and just like a president can't be sued while in office, because you could bring the government, grind it to a halt if you were to allow those sort of things. And yes, there are some circumstances where there have been presidents who've been sued, Paula Jones sued against Bill Clinton. But the general rule is that you cannot have the country brought to a halt by lawfare against the president. And that's a longstanding tradition. Whether it's constitutionally required is a different question, but that's a longstanding tradition. And to allow, whether it's a private litigant or to allow Robert Mueller, to allow anybody to drag the president through legal proceedings, could give rise to bad faith. That if you want to undermine the Trump administration, if you want to essentially undo the election, the way to do it is not in the voting booth. The way to do it is through lawfare. And that's the concern that you would have. I don't recall Obama, for all of his controversies, ever being dragged into a deposition or an interview. And in fact, they fought even plain information requests from the Congress vociferously. Eric Holder completely disregarded Congress and got held in contempt of court and then was never prosecuted for it. So there is a long history of presidents protecting their domain, if you want, protecting their power. And I don't see why Donald Trump should give that up. Certainly not to Robert Mueller. Certainly not given the taint of the FBI investigation of Hillary, the taint of FBI investigators who hated Trump. Is there any doubt in anyone's mind that Robert Mueller and his team, and I keep emphasizing his team, really want to get Donald Trump? I mean, is there any doubt in anyone's mind? Now, whether they can do it is a different question.
I also think it's interesting as to why they want to get him. Part of it is partisanship, as the overwhelming number of people on the team have written checks to presidential candidates who were Democrats. None of them have written a single check to a Republican presidential candidate. And so there's that. But I also think that's a class thing. I think Bob Mueller, based on the mountains of stuff I've been forced to read about him over the years, you know, covering this stuff, seems to be one of those, we are just not that kind of person around here, and you're very meticulous and et cetera. And I think the presence of Donald Trump is anathema to him. I think it just makes him uncomfortable that Trump is president. He sees it as a blot on the white shoe establishment that he's a part of. And he wants to, I think it's in a way kind of like the fight between Ken Starr, who is this kind of buttoned down guy, and the gregarious, lascivious Bill Clinton.
Well, I think there's another angle here that I focused on very early, and it percolates every now and then in the mainstream media. But what is the investigation supposed to be about? It started off about Russia collusion. Based on what is available information, it seems to be focusing on the firing of James Comey. Who is James Comey? James Comey is Robert Mueller's longtime close personal friend.
Right.
Robert Mueller should not even be here in this position, because he's investigating a case where his good, close friend is a key witness. You should not be investigating essentially your own friend. And so what's the motivation here? It might be this holier than thou attitude that a lot of federal prosecutors have. A lot of prosecutors have that. But it may also be that they are truly personally offended that Comey, their friend, was unceremoniously booted from the White House.
No, that's a very good
Or I should
point.
say from the F by the
The
White House
FBI, from the
from
FBI,
FBI.
exactly. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I want to, but before I let you go, I want to ask you about one thing, and it was the conclusion of the case, the Larry Nassar case, that despicable guy who molested all those women in the gymnastics program. And there was a point in the sentencing where the judge did this.
Sir, I'm giving you 175 years, which is 2,100 months. I've just signed your death warrant. I need everyone to be quiet. I still have contempt powers. I told you I'm not nice. Thank you. That's all for the record.
I just like to know, as a law professor and someone who's watched the law in the court for years, separate from whether we think Larry Nassar is getting justice, which I think the overwhelming theory is what he deserves everything he gets and more. What did you think of the judge's behavior?
It was like watching, and I only saw that, the 20-second clip. I have seen some of, I saw Ali Reisman when she gave her statement, but I haven't watched the whole trial or anything. But I saw
Right.
that clip, which went viral, and I felt like I was watching Judge Judy. Okay. I've been home during the daytime a little bit lately, so I get to watch these stupid shows. And that's what you expect on Judge Judy, that performance for the camera. That's what I felt the judge was performing for the camera. And I don't think that's a good thing. She could have imposed the very same sentence. She could have, without, I forget if she ripped up or threw out his letter very, dramatically. I don't think that really advances anything. It's drama for drama's sake. And it might, I don't know if it will, but those sort of theatrics by a judge could lead to a basis for appealing the sentence. You don't want to give a defendant like that, who certainly deserves to spend the rest of his life in prison, any opening to contest the sentence. Of course, that doesn't mean he walks free. It means he'd
Right.
have to be resentenced. But why give him that?
Yeah.
Okay. And in order to score that TV viral moment, this judge gave him that slight opening to try to contest the sentence.
And
And so it's just stupid.
I agree with that part, and that's something I hadn't even thought of. And so, thank you for sharing that with us. My point is just I know I guess dignity is passé. Nobody does that anymore. But I like the idea that it's the defendants who are the out of control people, and it's the courts who are the in control people, and that they are dispassionately applying the law. And that was so much for TV and the little flick and everything, and the whole performance. It was all, I don't like this victim impact stuff. I don't like any of it. I want, here's what the facts are. Here was the law is. You broke the law. Here's the punishment. Bye bye. And I just guess those days are gone, and my kids will never know what I'm talking about one day when they grow up.
Well, I think the victim impact is legitimate because in assessing the penalty, I think it's worth knowing the harm that was caused beyond the act itself, the harm it had on a person. So I think that's legitimate. And nothing that I saw, either from victim statements or even his own somewhat pathetic statement in court, I don't think any of that crossed the line. I mean, I think that's fair for a sentencing hearing. But the judge, engaging in performance art from the bench, I think was wrong.
I agree with you, Professor Jacobson. And I can't remember how long I've been reading legalinsurrection.com. We've gotten into a great deal of trouble in the past. And it's great to have you on the podcast. Keep up the great work, and I'll be visiting your site like I do every day.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for listening to the Michael in the Morning podcast. Remember, you can subscribe for free at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and of course, join ricochet.com so you can listen and be part of the conversation. And if you do choose to leave a 5-star review when you subscribe, remember, think Democrat, vote early and often. I am Michael Graham. Have a great day.
Ryan.